Sign up with MyBookie and use our promo code Gators to get your first ever deposit match dollar for dollar. Bet anything, anywhere, anytime with MyBookie.
Want more Gators Breakdown? Join Gators Breakdown Plus. Starting at $3 a month, get access to unique episodes, plus a blog, chat room, giveaways, shout-outs, and more. Gators Breakdown Plus is furthering the interaction with fans and listeners like you. Head to GatorsBreakdown.supportingcast.fm to join Gators Breakdown Plus today. Gators Breakdown. Because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown Podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Here we are, Monday night edition, live on YouTube, podcast version out there available later. Joining me for this episode, of course, is Will Miles, as he does every Monday night. Find him at his site, readandreaction.com, on YouTube at readandreaction. And you can find him on Twitter at Will Miles, SEC. Will, here we are, six games in, halfway through the season. Gators sit at 4-2 after a 42-0 victory over Vanderbilt. I've used it. You've used it. Inconsistent, man, seems about to be the best word.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at it. Even Mullen said it today during his press conference. Like, you know, you look at the first five drives, two touchdowns, and we stopped them, and then nothing. And then you come out of the second half, and you know, you look at the first five or six drives, three touchdowns for Florida, an interception, a couple of three and outs for Vanderbilt. All of a sudden, you got 35 points in those, and then seven the rest of the game. So he's like, you know, we basically outplayed them for a quarter. And the other three, not so much. Like, yeah, it sounds about right based on the way it felt watching that game. And then you look up at the end of the game and it's 42-0. And I had a Florida State beat writer afterwards retweet one of my tweets and say, oh my, something along the lines of, oh my, to be able to take for granted a 42-0 win. I'm like, you know, that does sort of put things in perspective. Yeah. You know, that our goals are bigger than just competing, that our goals are associated with winning championships, and that there are other schools in the state that do not have those goals right now. And so, you know, for all of the warts for this team, all of the inconsistencies for this team, could be worse. That's for sure.
It can be worse. Going along with that, you got Miami losing their starting quarterback. It comes out today De'Eric King will miss the rest of the season as well. So, yeah, Florida State, a little bit of bounce back. Two straight wins now over Syracuse, North Carolina. Small arrow trending up, I guess, for those guys. But, you know, Syracuse, yeah, okay, whatever. North Carolina, preseason hype a little bit there. Not living up to the expectation, especially now after getting beat by FSU. So North Carolina floundering a bit, the in-state school down south, Miami losing their starting quarterback. So, look, plenty of time. Those two teams say they'll have to play each other, Florida State at the end of the year as well. But in-state, it is Florida with the only real threat of doing much this year when you compare it to three schools. But then look around the SEC as well, Will. Man, what a weekend, the SEC. You had the exciting game of Ole Miss and Arkansas at the same time as Florida Vandy, so you could catch the end of that game after Florida Vanderbilt went final. And then if you stayed up late, watched it, you got the nightcap of Texas A&M knocking down Alabama at home, and kind of shifts the college football world just a little bit more. First of all, just the number one team in the country goes down. Second of all, it's Alabama. Their first trip on the road this year in that big-time environment was here in Gainesville at the Swamp, and Florida almost did what Texas A&M was able to do Saturday night versus Alabama.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It does make you sort of question, right? Is Alabama really all that great, or did they just sort of get caught in a situation where they're on the road? Obviously, they've struggled now in two big-time environments on the road both times. You know, once they lose by a field goal, once they win by two. Obviously, we would have liked to have had those things swapped in terms of when they lost and when they won. Yeah. But at the same time, I think most people thought that the experience in the Swamp was going to carry over and that they were going to come out and they were going to be much better against A&M. The reality is, in that first half, they were pretty bad against A&M. And in fact, A&M pretty much dominated the first half, and then Alabama absolutely dominated the second, and came down to, I think, some questionable coaching calls by Nick Saban, not calling timeouts at the end of the first half, sort of, you know, imitating Dan Mullen from the week before against Kentucky. And then, you know, some field goals when they got in the red zone to pull it to within, you know, to pull it to within what, four, and then to pull it to within one, and then finally get the touchdown, the 2-point conversion to go up seven. And then all of a sudden A&M just flipped the switch. So, and you're missing the one, you know, the Red River rivalry was also awesome. Oh man. Saturday that was too. So
the, oh man. That te- then the, that Texas in the press box game. Watching. Yeah. I was in the press box watching. You had Alabama. I keep saying Alabama, the Ole Miss Arkansas game right there at noon. And you had that Red River rivalry too. And I was like, that was like, for what we got, the 42-0 victory there in the Swamp, it was quickly, you could, all you had to do was flip the channels and have some excitement right after Florida Vanderbilt.
Yeah, well, you can tell we were playing Vanderbilt because we're talking about other games that were going on during the Florida game. <That's right. laughs> And we would have nothing to say about those games if Florida was playing a formidable Correct. Opponent this weekend, because we wouldn't have been watching those other games. But now, you know, look, you get these games to sort of get healthy, to work on things, you know, to show what you're about in terms of, can you put opponents away or can you not? And I think we learned a lot. And I think some of it is good, and I think some of it is bad. And, you know, it's one of those things where I think coming out of that Vanderbilt game, especially the Kentucky game too, but especially coming out of the Vanderbilt game, I think we can reset some of our expectations in terms of what we expect from the team, what we expect from the offense, and quite honestly, what we expect from the defense as well. And so, you know, again, some of that is good. Some of that is bad. Some of that is sort of, you know, who knows, it's Monday, we'll get a different thing from the offense than we will on Tuesday, and we'll get a different thing from the offense in the first quarter on Saturday than we will in the third quarter on Saturday. And that's just sort of the hallmark of this team. But you know, the other thing is that if you watched the Kentucky and LSU game, or if you watched any of the other games, where even the Alabama game against Texas A&M, there are plenty of mistakes made, plenty of inconsistencies, plenty mm-hmm. of times where you're like, oh God, I wish that guy had made the play. And you know, even the Auburn game when they were playing Georgia, same sort of thing. You're sitting there,
a lot of drops there.
Well, and you're rooting for Auburn because, you know, we never root for Georgia. And you're sitting there going, God, it must be really frustrating week after week after week to root for Bo Nix. Like, that must just really be frustrating. And then you're like, huh, I have Emory Jones. This is fun. Yeah. Like, at least I don't have to root for Bo Nix. So, you know, again, I think actually the noon game gave me a little bit of perspective as I watched these other teams. You know, I watched Virginia Tech against Notre Dame, and I watched those teams with different quarterbacks who could make plays but were incredibly inconsistent. Same thing with their defenses. So I think you do sort of get into a tunnel sometimes in the SEC, where you see Florida play against these teams you think they should put away, and you go, oh, that's inconsistent. Why is it like that? And then you see them play a really good team like an Alabama or a Georgia, and maybe they're not able to necessarily compete with those teams. And you look at that, and you know, sort of the sky is falling. But you know, you look all the way across the college football landscape. I mean, Michigan barely escapes from Nebraska. Nebraska can't buy a win when they get within a touchdown, like Scott Frost just cannot buy one.
Adrian Martinez with another fumble. I mean, it's just, come on, dude.
You know, so I mean, it is what it is, right? Like, it's funny. Just about everybody is inconsistent in college football. That's always been the hallmark. Point.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point before we go forward. And we'll talk plenty of quarterback, but look at the last couple of years of college football. You don't have a Joe Burrow out there. You don't have a Mac Jones. You don't have a Kyle Trask. Those three quarterbacks that lit up the scoreboard the last 2 years, you're not seeing that across college football. I mean, Georgia's the number one team in the country right now, but they're not getting that quarterback play. It's based off of an awesome, great, elite defense right now. You know, there is no Joe Burrow, Mac Jones, Kyle Trask out there right now.
Well, there is, but he's in Mississippi, and we thankfully don't have to play Ole Miss.
And it gets overlooked because it is Ole Miss, and you know, they're not competing for a national championship. I guess that's what I'll say. Teams that can win a national championship, there's not that style of quarterback.
Yeah, well, you know, but you did get one loss from Alabama. If you get another one, maybe Ole Miss can sneak in there. I am.
It's not over. You're right. This season's been crazy enough as it is, so I guess I shouldn't shove them away just yet.
You know, we'll see. I mean, all we need is two losses from Georgia and Kentucky, and we're right back in it, man. So, you know, look, I think we all know that most of the goals for Florida are sort of not out in front of them, right? I mean, they're going to need an awful lot of help to accomplish those goals, and they're going to have to get a lot better to accomplish those goals too. But you're absolutely correct in that, you know, everybody thinks about Georgia and Alabama as being head and shoulders above everyone else. I think Stetson Bennett's been a lot better this year.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when I've been able to watch him, I think he's been better, but made better decisions. I think even last year before he got hurt against Florida, I think that did change the dynamic of that game a little bit. at the same time, if you tell me that Georgia's got Stetson Bennett leading them to a national championship or leading them, you know, and that's their ticket to a national championship, I think before the season I would have taken that. Right. I would have taken that in the Florida game. Right. If, hey, JT Daniels is going to be hurt and Florida gets Stetson Bennett in the cocktail party, do you think you have a good shot? I think we would have said we have a pretty good shot. And that's something that I do think we saw from Florida, even against Vanderbilt. Right. Like Florida at its best, I think, can run on and score on anybody. But Florida at its average can't score on Vanderbilt. And that's sort of the thing, is that they've got to be running in top gear the entire time in order to really be that elite kind of team that's going to be able to compete. The question is, can they do that for four quarters? Mullen even said it during his press conference today, is that, you know, it's hard to stay that intense, that focused for 3.5 hours, you know, but that's one of the reasons why you want all the recruiting, all the depth, all that sort of stuff, so that when someone does sort of let up a little bit on the intensity, hey, we got two guys back here who are just as good. We're going to put them in the game until you get intense again. And, you know, you can sort of rotate those guys in.
Absolutely, absolutely. So plenty of to talk about here on this episode of Gators Breakdown. We'll get into all the quarterback talk from Dan Mullen today in his press conference. Also, take a look at the run game just a little bit. Of course, had that starting just looking at SEC play. We know what happened in the first couple games, but looking at SEC play, we'll take a look at the run game. Much better, Alabama, Tennessee, not quite as good versus Kentucky and Vanderbilt. We'll just take a look at some quick numbers there and, you know, try and piece together some things there. Also, before we wrap it up, a little quick hitter, of course, Elijah Blades now dismissed from the Florida Gator program. So that's what we'll wrap it up there with. But there's your outline for this episode. And if you missed it last week, of course, the announcement there, Gators Breakdown, the Gator Collective, teaming up, pairing up here. Of course, you know, it's your chance to commit to Florida Gator student athletes out there. Commit to the Gator Collective. Create opportunities for student athletes to earn compensation for their name, image, and likeness. You want to help the Gators on the recruiting trail? This can do that. It can help that in so many ways. Their potential student athletes will see that. They'll react and see just what we have going on at the Gator Collective. The link is in the description there. You can start helping future student athletes, current student athletes there with the Gator Collective. A lot of content out there. Most recent interview there with Ethan White and his mom, of course, really good content interview there. Shannon Snell leading that one. Our friend Neil Blackman with Rashad Torrance later on this week as well. So some good stuff out there that you can get from the Gator Collective, as I said. Find the link in the description. You can get the access there. Will, here we go. Dan Mullen meeting with the media here on Monday. Let's get into what he says about quarterback Emory Jones. And here he says, you know, the biggest improvement Emory Jones has made is his comfort within his decision-making on game day, distributing the ball, being comfortable in the pocket, and the speed in which he makes the reads. The biggest area he has grown is his preparation within the game week. He's really taken it to another level each week. When you go through spring and fall camp, you see a lot of similar looks against the same defense week in and week out, and you get comfortable with those things. Once you get into game week, that's when the variations come. So early in the season, Dan Mullen said Emory thought he was comfortable and that he felt comfortable and ready to go play the game, but wasn't as comfortable within the variations and what the defenses were throwing at him, how they'd affect the offense. You've seen his approach change so far, and he's grown more confident in that change. Said he's will for more of the physical aspect of it. He says he's early on some throws, late on some throws, on time on some throws. A lot of it comes down to processing everything. He has to go through all the pre-snap coverage reads, post-snap coverage reads, go through his progressions, get the ball out, etc. The more you do it, the better you get at it through the years. So, well, I brought it up, of course. I said it a lot, I believe, in the Gators Breakdown chats, the Twitter Spaces chats in the mornings here on this Monday morning. And look, this is Dan Mullen really continuing what he said in the preseason of what he saw from Emory Jones as far as the physical attributes. One time he'll make a good throw and follow it up with three plays where you're wondering what the heck he's doing, the good and the bad. And we're seeing more of that. There are the big plays now versus Vanderbilt. We saw it. Luckily, we saw it. The reads were there. The throws, sometimes there, sometimes not there. Big plays still happen because the opportunities were taken advantage of. But there was Dan Mullen's kind of summary of how he would assess Emory Jones right now through six games of this Gator season.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. When you go look at him compared to Kyle Trask's first five starts, they're actually pretty close. You know, Trask had a QB rating of 156.5, but he had 15 touchdowns and four interceptions. Jones has a QB rating of 141.7. He's got 10 touchdowns and seven interceptions, obviously two more on the ground. But if you put him at 15 and four touchdown to interceptions, just like Trask was, they'd have almost identical QB ratings. Now, the problem is that there's a big difference between 15 touchdowns and four interceptions and 10 touchdowns and seven interceptions. And that's been the big thing, is that Jones has been really a turnover machine when it comes to Florida on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, they've turned the ball over at least once in every game that they've had thus far. And that's the thing I think that we need to see improve. You know, we could talk about deep shots. We could talk about reads. We could talk about all that stuff. At the end of the day, he's doing something that Trask was never able to do, which is he's got 75 rushes for 478 yards. So he's averaging 6.4 yards per attempt. Yeah, he's averaging a little bit less to the air, 7.3 yards per attempt. But Trask was only at 8.1 through his first five. And yeah, he did play against Georgia, and he did play against LSU and Auburn. But, you know, I mean, Emory Jones has played against Alabama. Kentucky's a pretty decent team. Tennessee looks like they're better than maybe we gave him credit for. So, you know, a little bit easier competition. Definitely, I'm not saying that he's Kyle Trask, but I'm saying that when we look at what we evaluated with Trask, I mean, at the time we were in a desert of offense, right? It was like we'd gone through the McElwain and Muschamp years, and then you get Felipe Franks starting, and the team was really inconsistent with Franks at quarterback. And then when Trask came in, at least it was consistent. At least it seemed like it was consistent over and over and over, game to game to game. And I think that's sort of the thing you see. In fact, if you look at his, he had 168 was his QB rating against Tennessee, then 146 against Auburn, 146 against LSU, 148 against South Carolina, 149 against Georgia. So basically, he was the same quarterback all four games, the last four games, and even the Tennessee game. He was 202 for Towson, but okay, I don't think we can count that, right? So if you look at Emory Jones, 95.5 against FAU, 118 against USF, 115 against Alabama, 179 against Tennessee, 133 against Kentucky, and then 218 against Vanderbilt. And again, I think we could throw that one out. So he's been much more up and down for each of these different games. He had a great game against Tennessee. He had a bad game against Kentucky. And for Trask, we didn't see that, right? It was 145 for Auburn, LSU, South Carolina, and Georgia. And I think that's really where the difference comes in, is that there's just been more inconsistency game to game with Jones than there was with Trask. But when you look at their overall numbers, I actually think Emory Jones' season, first six games compared to Trask's first six games, I think it compares favorably. In fact, I think you could even say that Jones has been a better player, but the turnovers and the inconsistency make it feel like he's not, and it makes it feel like the offense is constantly sort of in danger of sputtering, because that might happen, because we just saw it happen in the last game or the last drive or the last quarter.
Yeah, basically the only thing we were hitting Kyle Trask on was holding on to the ball too long and getting hit and fumbling. that was what we were, you know, pointing out with Kyle Trask, saying, okay, well, the more reps he gets, and this is exactly what happened, the more reps he gets, he'll get the timing down, he'll take care of the ball better, and that's pretty much exactly what happened with Kyle Trask. So hopefully, all these reps that keep adding up for Emory Jones, you see the kind of same progression there you saw with Kyle Trask. Let's move on to the other quarterback. Of course, can't not talk quarterbacks and not talk Anthony Richardson here. Dan Mullen was asked about him as well, and here's what he said about Anthony Richardson, is that he's still learning some of those pre-snap, post-snap things when he gets out there in the fourth quarter. Said it's not a short-term process. It's a year-long process to continue to get comfortable doing all the stuff that we ask him to do. The number of reps the player needs, getting comfortable and doing all that stuff, it's nothing you can teach in a day or two, is what Dan Mullen said. Richardson has done well working through those things as he improves and gets better. It takes a long time to learn. So, Will, here we go. Yeah, both quarterbacks. Would we have loved for Emory Jones to come in ready to go game one and put up stats galore from the first game of the season? I know we see young quarterbacks come in all the time in college football and excel right away. But it's not cookie cutter, especially for Dan Mullen and his quarterbacks. I mean, he's going to have his way of doing things and his way of trusting the way he's done it, and he should. You know, I think Emory Jones had a realization, kind of going with Dan Mullen said, he had a realization of what it takes to be a starting quarterback at Florida and a starting quarterback under Dan Mullen here playing in the SEC. He's shown progress since then. We shouldn't shy away from that. There has been progress from game one to game six here from Emory Jones. May not be as fast as we would had wanted it to be. That can be an argument, especially since he's been around the program for four seasons. But I do think it's kind of clear now why he's the starting quarterback for Florida over Anthony Richardson a little bit. We got excited about what Richardson could bring to the table in those first couple of games of this season, but he's not far enough along for Dan Mullen to be ready to throw him out there before he thinks he's really ready. We know Dan Mullen's reputation when it comes to that. He is not going to throw a quarterback out there before he thinks they're ready. Whether you or me or the whole fan base can sit there and think Anthony Richardson, if Dan Mullen doesn't think so, he's not going to throw him out there in that starting role, taking a whole lot of snaps out there role. That's just Dan Mullen's MO. We know that. We should not be surprised by that. And we know that about Dan Mullen for his reputation for quarterback play. And look, I think Anthony Richardson knows that too. He knows Dan Mullen's reputation for quarterbacks, developing quarterbacks. And from everything I can gather, from people I can talk to who's closer to the program than I am, Richardson knows that, and he accepts that. He knows where he's at and where he stands, and has no issue with where he's at on Florida's pecking order at the quarterback. So, look, we still got six games this season, Will. Both quarterbacks will play a role in this offense moving forward, and you'll probably continue to see the good and bad side from both.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a lot to unpack there in what you said. I think clearly I would hope Emory Jones is ahead of Anthony Richardson when it comes to the preparation. Yeah. One of the things that was a little bit disappointing, to be honest with you, for me, at least for the press conference today, was Mullen talking about how the preparation was a surprise to Emory Jones this year, how he had to buckle down after the first couple of games because he didn't realize what kind of preparation was going to be necessary. Well, he just watched a guy who didn't start since high school jump in and take the reins, and clearly Trask had been preparing like the starting quarterback the entire time he was there, because the minute he jumped in, there wasn't a drop off, but it was the offense took a step forward. And so I do think that's a little bit of a backhanded compliment, maybe, when you say, oh yeah, first couple of games taught him he needs to pay attention and study film more studiously during the week.
Emory has said that himself too, so I've thought that to myself a little bit as well.
I'm just sitting there going, you watched the backup quarterback in 2019 and you didn't win the job, right? Because that guy ostensibly prepared more than you did. Because let's be honest, Mullen would have loved to have given the job to Emory Jones if Emory Jones was a better player. But he gave it to Kyle Trask because Trask prepared, and Trask obviously was a really good player and was able to take the reins. Now, with all that said, I think Emory Jones, like you said, has gotten better consistently game after game after game. The thing, though, that I would push back on is the idea that Anthony Richardson has all this time, all this learning that he needs to do and all that sort of stuff. I mean, here's the deal. I went back and I looked at explosive plays. Florida's got 35, 20 plus yard plays. Emory Jones has over 250 touches, 18 explosives that could be attributed to him. So one explosive every 12.8 plays. Anthony Richardson has 39 total touches, 8 explosives that can be attributed to him. So 4.9 touches for every explosive play, and they're giving him 9.8 touches per game. So, you know, yes, he threw an interception in the last game that was bad, right? That ball needs to get thrown away, or he needs to just run with it, or whatever. Yes, he had a drive that stalled, but let's be honest, the drive stalled because of an illegal formation on a 3rd and 2 that he converted on a running play, right? And then all of a sudden it's 3rd and 7.
And Jacob Copeland, the play before, not getting the 1 yard he needed to get.
Well, that too. So I look at it and I go, okay, he's getting limited opportunities. He didn't get a whole lot of help from his teammates. And, you know, he didn't bust an 80-yard run. Well, nobody busts an 80-yard run every time they touch the ball. That's one of the things that made it so impressive, that he seemed to have that magical ability to bust an 80-yard play at any point. He's still by far the most explosive player on the team. And even with a hamstring, it's not 100%, I think he's the most explosive player on the team. And the fact that they're only giving him 10 touches a game, I think actually the fact that they're giving him 10 touches a game says something about how explosive he is, because otherwise I think they'd bury him on the depth chart if he was sort of a carbon copy of Emory Jones. I think they realize that he's special.
Yeah.
The issue that I have is that, you know, fans who see him overthrow a couple people, miss a read, throw a bad interception, then go, well, AR doesn't look any better than Emory. It's like, well, you're forgetting the first two games where Florida scores maybe 24 points in those games without Anthony Richardson running nuts, you know, all over the field. And the reason those games were way out of hand is because AR was the guy who was turning in touchdowns the minute he touched the ball. I don't think he's that good, but I don't think he's as subdued as he's shown the last couple of games. I think it's a matter of he just hasn't gotten enough reps. If you give him 250 reps, I think you're going to get a lot of explosives. I think you get more than the 18 you got from Emory Jones, but I think you'll probably get a bunch of interceptions too. And so the question is, if Emory Jones can limit the mistakes that he's making through the air, then I think he might be a better option short term. But if he's not going to limit those mistakes, if he's going to throw all those interceptions anyway, why not let it fly with the guy who's got higher upside? But again, I think this battle's already been fought and already lost, right? Because the head coach thinks Emory Jones needs to be the starter. But I do think it's worth pointing out. I mean, so Anthony Richardson is responsible for 23% of all of the Gator explosive plays this year, and he's touched the ball 39 times.
And missed two complete games.
So when you think the offense feels different when he's in there, you're right, it does, because they are much more explosive. And when you think about what was missing in that Kentucky game, the thing that was missing was the big play, like the Wandale Robinson pass that put up 7 for Kentucky, like the blocked field goal that put up another 7 for Kentucky. And you know, if Florida had been able to put up 7 or 14 just by nature of having a guy in there who was explosive, it completely changes the complexion of that game. So you know, look, we're going to be talking about quarterback till we're blue in the face. This is going to be the best offseason topic we have until one of them transfers. Hopefully, you know, I think the only person who thinks Richardson's in danger of transferring is the Orlando Sentinel. Like you said, I think he's pretty happy with where he's at. I think he trusts Dan Mullen. I think Mullen has a track record to get somebody like him to the NFL. You know, I look at the statistics and still say you know, yeah, he hasn't been as explosive the last two games, but part of that is just you haven't gotten him the ball enough, and it's unreasonable to, I mean, you know, if you're saying that Emory Jones is creating an explosive once every 13 times he touches the ball, if you give Anthony Richardson 10 touches and he doesn't have an explosive, is that really an appropriate way to make a judgment on, oh, he looks less explosive? I don't think so. I think at the end of the day, the more touches they give him, the more they're going to get. And the fact that they've been restricting those means that you don't see that explosiveness from him, not necessarily because of the injury.
I know some people want to bring up, and Robert brought it up in the chat here, and I did have to respond. Some people will bring up, well, Richardson can't handle the SEC competition a little bit. Well, okay. Kentucky's a good team. First game back. Okay. Maybe there's an excuse there. I'm sorry, Vanderbilt might be worse than USF and FAU, so I'm not going to throw the whole competition thing in there too much. Vandy is one of the worst teams in the country there when you look at that regard. And don't get me wrong, they did a good job, and I think, as I said, I think the help around, Will, you brought it up too, the help around Richardson wasn't necessarily the best either. Vandy brought the blitz, good, pressured him a bit. Like I said, the first interception, yeah, was bad. They're going to happen. He's a young player. The very next drive he comes in, Copeland should have converted a second down. You get those procedure penalty, Will, discussed as well. He didn't get a whole lot of help either. I'd still like to see more. I think we all like to see more. I think there's a place for Richardson on this team, but it is clear, I think we have to input what the coach is going to do here. And as Will said, that is pretty clear what the coach is going to do in his approach to this Gator quarterback situation.
Well, look, man, Florida's 2-2 in SEC play, and two of those games Anthony Richardson didn't start or even really play in at all. So I'm not ready to anoint anybody as ready for SEC play when you're 2-2 in the conference, right? Because Florida, 2-2 isn't good enough for Florida in this conference. 3-1 is still going to have some people ornery. You know, and at the end of the day, all your goals for the season have basically gone away. And I think we both can, you know, I think if Anthony Richardson plays in that Alabama game the way he'd played in the first couple of games, or at least was that kind of threat, Florida might pull that game out. I think if he plays in the Kentucky game and they give him more touches in that Kentucky game, I think Florida has a real opportunity to win that one too. You know, you got to use the weapon.
Stucky man after the face mask penalty to Emory Jones, that a Stucky man and said, all right, you're running the ball 4 straight times. If they stop us,
nice.
Give them credit.
Now you sound like Denny Thompson. But, you know, look, I mean, they have struggled so much in the red zone. In all of the games where they've lost, they've settled for field goals they shouldn't have. They haven't been able to convert 3rd-and-1s. Not all of that is on Emory Jones. In fact, I think Emory Jones is actually a pretty good short yardage runner. At the same time, like, they've struggled enough in the red zone, and the pass has not been a big enough threat in the red zone that, yeah, I think there are opportunities. You know, I always used to think about this with the Jets when they brought in Tim Tebow and and Mark Sanchez was there and bristling about Tebow being there in camp. And it just never made sense to me that they brought him in, they dealt with the circus, and then when it came to fourth and one, they were like, well, we're going to let Sanchez drop back and throw it. It's like, no, the reason you have Tebow there is so that he can get that fourth and one for you. Otherwise, you don't need him there. And I think that's one of the things that hopefully we see going forward a little bit is if you're gonna switch guys in and out, it should make a little bit more sense than just giving the guy the third drive and then you know, the third drive of the second half. Instead, situationally, right? If you can only teach him a few plays, teach him the plays where it's useful for you to use, right? When you're coming against Georgia, coming off the bye week, you're going to have a package of plays. There are going to be times where you think you have the opportunity to take advantage of something. You know what he does well. Have him come in for that play, that situation, that particular instance, rather than saying, well, I'm going to give you a drive. And that's the same criticism I think people have had for Mullen, the way he's used his quarterbacks for an extended period of time, right? I mean, I think that LSU game a couple of years ago with Joe Burrow, there was a drive where Emory Jones came in and they gave it to him on the 20, and it was a three and out for Florida. They kicked it back to LSU.
I think Kyle Trask was playing pretty good at the time.
Well, I think Florida was even up by a touchdown at the time, and then Burrow drove him right back down the field and put him ahead. So, obviously the putting a guy in for the entire drive is the way Mullen likes to do things, which is how you don't get Anthony Richardson in there for first and goal from the five or whatever it was after that face mask. But I think we'd all like to see a little bit more creativity in terms of bringing in a guy who's that explosive and has shown to be that explosive so far.
All right. We got some more offensive stuff to look at too. We'll get to the run game a little bit and the difference between the first two SEC games and the last two SEC games. But before we do, where you're betting at is just as important as who you're betting on, and that's why I always tell people to put your money down at MyBookie. The Arizona Cardinals have come out to a hot start. The Chiefs have as many losses as they did last year, and with all the overs hitting in the dying seconds of games, there's never been a better time to get in on the action. Thankfully, MyBookie's lock of the season has returned. If you're an NHL fan, you get Las Vegas, Seattle, NHL opening night. And when either team scores in the game, you win. MyBookie is lowering the over-under on the total goals scored in the Kraken versus Golden Knights opening day game to half goals. The moment either team lights the lamp, you win. Take the easy win, pat yourself on the back, and use your winnings towards your NFL picks for Week 6, which includes a battle between two potential Super Bowl contenders when the Cardinals meet the Browns. Don't miss out on the winning season. Head to MyBookie, use our promo code Gators, and you'll get your first deposit doubled. That's promo code Gators so you can double your funds to double your winnings. Bet anything, anywhere, anytime with my bookie. I want to take a look at the run game a little bit today, not necessarily to praise it or slam it, but just kind of take a snapshot. First two SEC games, last two SEC games. I think we know there are different circumstances. The run game has had to deal with those first couple SEC games, a little bit more healthy up front. And you ran really well versus Bama and Tennessee. Not as well the last couple games versus Kentucky and Vanderbilt. Just quick snapshot here. I didn't include the first couple games, of course, just to do with SEC play. Anthony Richardson didn't play versus Bama and Tennessee. There are different things here. Just wanted to kind of look at SEC play here when we look at this. So, Will, if you go back to Bama, Malik Davis, 10 carries, 86 yards, 8.6 yard average. He had a 26-yard long run, one touchdown. Emory Jones, 19 carries versus Bama, 77 yards. He had 4.1. But then, as I said, you had Malik Davis with 8.6. You had another running back, Naquan Wright, 7 carries, 8.3 yards a carry, 58 yards. Damian Pierce, 7 carries, 24 yards, but he did have the 2 touchdowns. So in that game versus Bama, Florida, 43 carries. And I'm including Davis, Jones, Wright, and Pierce. That's kind of – I'm going to include those guys there in the first two. I'll throw Anthony Richardson in the last two. But versus Bama, 43 carries, 245 yards, 5.7 yards a carry for Davis, Jones, Wright, and Pierce. Moved to Tennessee the next week. Emory Jones, 15 carries. He led the way versus Tennessee. He had 19 carries versus Alabama, 15 carries versus Tennessee. 144 yards on the ground for Emory Jones, 9.6 yard average, had a 49 yard run versus Tennessee as well. Damian Pierce, 8 carries, 62 yards, 7.8 yards a carry versus Tennessee, 9.6 for Emory, 7.8 for Damian Pierce. Well, this is probably the most well-rounded one so far, Will, in the SEC. Malik Davis, 10 carries, 45 yards, 4.5 yards a carry. Naquan Wright, 7 carries, 32 yards, 4.6 yards a carry. Gets Tennessee, the Gators, 40 carries, 283 yards, 7.1 yards a carry. So then it changes a little bit. You had those two successful games at the beginning of the SEC. Kentucky, Emory Jones leads the way again, second straight week. Tennessee, Kentucky leads in carries here. 13 carries, 63 yards, 4.8 yards. Damian Pierce, 8 carries, 54 yards, 6.8. We did want him to get more carries versus Kentucky, almost 7 yards a carry for Damian Pierce. Anthony Richardson comes back. Add him to the mix. 5 carries, 25 yards, 5 yards a carry versus Kentucky. But, Will, here's the difference. Malik Davis, 8 carries, 22 yards, 2.8 yards a carry. Naquan Wright, 5 carries, 7 yards, 1.4 yards a carry. Only one running back really with some success versus Kentucky. And then this last week versus Vanderbilt, judge this how you want to. I think Florida was trying to work on some things here. But Naquan Wright leads the way this time. 7 carries, 46 yards, 6.6 yards a carry. Emory Jones, 5 yards a carry versus Vanderbilt, 40 yards, 8 yards a carry there for Emory Jones. Damian Pierce, 7 carries, only 12 yards, 1.7 yards. Anthony Richardson, 5 carries, 11 yards. So back to Kentucky, 39 carries, only 4.4 yards for that rushing game there after averaging the first two SEC games, 5.7 versus Bama, 7.1 versus Tennessee, goes all the way down to 4.4 versus Kentucky, and then against Vanderbilt, 4.5 when you only include Wright, Jones, Pierce, and Richardson. I took out Bowman, took out Lingard. Just kind of looking at the starters here, what the starters did in their SEC games. So, of course, Will, Kentucky does a good job limiting the run game. I mean, that has looked different from the first 2 weeks and these last 2 weeks. Emory had a slightly higher yards per carry versus Kentucky than Bama, but that was more about the running backs here. Pierce was hot, didn't get the carries versus Kentucky. Other backs didn't contribute much in the rushing attack versus Kentucky and Vanderbilt. But Vanderbilt a little bit different, I think, as I said. Passing game, it was a focus. You could tell. You had no Malik Davis. Plus, later in the game, Lingard and Bowman get the carries. So not a whole lot of snaps there for those guys. But you still didn't get much consistency. And I think that's what we're seeing up front for this run attack and these run backs. Outside the big run from Wright versus Vanderbilt, not much there either. He had 12 more yards on 6 other carries besides that big run he had versus Vanderbilt. So Emory, of course, obviously wasn't going to run much versus Vanderbilt either. So that game, more about the game plan. Also, let's not forget the injuries up front. Richard Garage did not start. Kingsley went down during the game. But something I wanted to look at, you had the two games without Anthony Richardson and the two games with Anthony Richardson. Expected maybe a jump there in production from the run game, even bigger jump, even after the success of Alabama and Tennessee. But the bigger numbers didn't necessarily come in the run game. He did average 5 yards a carry versus Kentucky on 5 carries, but only 11 yards on 5 carries versus Vanderbilt. That we also one thing I noticed, this is just something I didn't know what I was going to get when I looked at comparing the first two SEC games and these last two SEC games. But I think the biggest thing that I took away was the number of backs that have success in the run game. And kind of surprised there. Malik Davis, as I said, 8.6 yards a carry versus Bama on 10 carries. But then you had Wright with 8.3 yards a carry on 7 carries. Damian Pierce led the way versus Tennessee for the running backs with 7.8 yards a carry. Davis, 4.5 on 10 carries. Wright, 4.6 on 7 carries. So you had multiple backs bringing the yardage versus Alabama and Tennessee. You didn't get that versus Kentucky and Vanderbilt. Pierce had his yards versus Kentucky, 6.8 yards a carry for 8 carries. Davis only 2.8. Wright only 1.4. Then versus Vandy, Wright has 7 carries, 6.6 yard average. Pierce only 1.7 on 7 carries with no Malik Davis versus the Commodores. So I think you take a look at that, Will, and you know, Pierce's numbers were a little taken aback because he's getting goal line carries. So his average is going to go a little bit down there versus Vanderbilt. But I think the biggest thing I took away was when the run game was working and I'm sitting there spouting the yards per carries, it was – more than one running back being able to hit the yards. But versus Kentucky and Vanderbilt, it's been limited to pretty much one running back.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, they like rotating guys in. I think sometimes that ends up being a good thing, especially long term in an SEC schedule. But I think short term, you do sacrifice something when you take somebody out who's seeing it, who's feeling strong and playing well on a particular day. And, you know, that's happened a few times where Pierce was the guy that you thought they should probably stick with, but they brought in Malik Davis, or Malik Davis was the guy you thought they should have brought it, should have kept out there, but they bring in Naquan Wright. I think when you look at the overall statistics for those guys, you know, 5.7 for Malik Davis, 5.8 for Damian Pierce, 5.1 for Naquan Wright. I think that's real. I think Naquan Wright, when he doesn't get ahead of steam, he's unbelievable when you get him in the open field, but behind an offensive line that isn't necessarily opening up holes, he's somebody who can get dropped for a 1 yard gain or a loss. He's not necessarily going to break through. Damian Pierce, I think, is a little bit different. And so if the offensive line is struggling, I think Pierce gives you an advantage. If the offensive line is playing well, then I think Wright gives you an advantage. And if the offensive line is sort of hit or miss, then I think Davis gives you the advantage because he's strong enough to maybe break through every once in a while if the defensive line gets through, but also shifty enough to make moves in the open field. And so they've got different skill sets for those guys. And I think maybe you could criticize him a little bit for not going with Pierce when the offensive line struggling or something like that. But the reality is, if the offensive line struggles, the running backs are going to struggle. And the big thing, I think, for the last couple of games, and we can look at yards per carry for these guys and all that sort of stuff, but there are two things that I would look at. One is the only guy who's been out there consistently on the offensive line who hasn't been dinged up in some capacity, I think, is Ethan White. So Garage has been banged up. Egwikin has been banged up. Stuart Reese has been banged up. DeLance has been banged up. And so even if they're out there, those guys are nursing injuries that we probably in some cases don't even know about, but are going to hinder your explosiveness, your ability to get off the ball. It's one of the reasons why the bye week for Florida is going to be so important before the Georgia game, because everybody's going to be able to get healthy and be fully fresh. And considering that Florida wants to be the physical team in that game and wants to beat them up front, that's going to be important that everybody on the offensive line has had an opportunity to get healthy. The other thing is if you look at the run, so I put something in my article last week, but so they had 17 quarterback runs against FAU, averaged 13.8 yards per rush, 17 quarterback runs against USF, averaged 11.5 yards per rush, 19 against Alabama, averaged 4.1 yards per rush, so a significant decrease. Tennessee, 15 quarterback runs, 9.6 yards per rush. Kentucky, 18 quarterback runs, 4.9 yards per rush, so again, down by where Alabama was. And then against Vanderbilt, Emory Jones averaged 8 yards per rush, and then Anthony Richardson averaged 2.2, but a bunch of those carries came in sort of garbage time when they weren't really trying to push that hard and had a bunch of backup offensive linemen in. So if you just look at Emory Jones' stats, because he was in there for the majority of the time, they had 8 yards per rush. So I actually think the big thing is as the quarterback run game goes, so goes the Florida offense. And you can see that in the first couple of games. You could even see it against Alabama, that the big runs that Emory Jones had came in that third and fourth quarter when Florida was able to drive the ball down the field. Against Tennessee, he had some big runs that really sort of opened things up. He ran for like 140 yards in that game. Against Kentucky, there just wasn't anything open pretty much the entire game. I think his longest run of the game was like 15 or 16 yards. And for the most part, again, he's only averaging 4 yards a rush there during in that, or 5 yards a rush in that Kentucky game. So that, to me, I think is the thing to look for, is that the running quarterback enables the offensive line to enables the offensive line to sort of relax, right? There are guys you don't have to pick up. It allows you to be more physical. You know that, you know, you don't know which direction the run's going to be going, and so it sort of keeps you on your toes, but also it makes the defense sort of go back on their heels. And the minute that Kentucky started to get some penetration, it really sort of slowed that down. Same thing with Alabama when they started to get some penetration. And even against Vanderbilt, there were times where Vanderbilt was able to get penetration or at least hold the line. And then the other thing is, I think in the Vanderbilt game, that Florida was willing to not run Emory Jones as much in that one, just because you don't want to get him dinged up. Now, this week against LSU, I think you're going to see him back in that 15, 16, 17 per game quarterback run. And the question is going to be, do they average 4 yards a carry or do they average 12 yards a carry? And maybe somewhere in between there. But, you know, that's going to tell you something about the explosiveness of the Florida offense, is how much yardage they're getting from the quarterback. And I think oftentimes that opens up the opportunities for the running backs to hit some big ones coming out of the backfield.
Well, I want to get to a point there. You know, you mentioned Florida at Kentucky, the struggles there. Well, and you mentioned the game this week, Florida and LSU. And a part of it was the communication up front, too. I think Florida was a little slow also firing off the ball versus Kentucky because of all the communication issues they had Well, we know they cannot have those same issues again this week versus LSU. You get the break of the noon LSU crowd and not a 3:30 or even the hellish night game crowd that it can be there in Baton Rouge. So you do catch that break there. But still, this is a, 95,000 seat stadium, I think, even at noon. It won't be full, but can still be louder than what you faced at Kentucky just a couple weeks ago. So Dan Mullen did say they worked on it. They've got it figured out. They have of their cadence and the clapping and whatever they have to do. If they have to change some things, they will be prepared for that environment of LSU. But that is something that you have to bring up because it did affect the offensive line at Kentucky. It affected the run game because of the could not fire the ball, lack of communication, just no confidence in being able to get off the ball there on the offensive line. So now another road game comes up. You know, we'd like to see, as you said, Emory Jones get more involved in the run game. But it also, to me, it starts up front just a little bit as well, and you cannot have that performance you had a couple weeks ago against Kentucky. Look, and it takes some pressure off the passing game. And I think if, you know, we're going to see Emory Jones take a lot of those shots that we saw versus Vanderbilt. Play action was involved in a lot of that. That's going to work even better against better teams. If the run game's working, that starts up front as well. So, of course, it's a chain reaction. I think we'll want to see a lot of play action there as the competition ramps up for Emory Jones and this passing attack for this Gator offense. But, Will, as you said, it kind of goes to our next – you started it. I was going to go what up there as well with the injuries. Richard Garage, of course, being out this past week, that had an effect. This offensive line – been battling injuries pretty much all year long. And then it extended to Malik Davis this past game as well. Dan Mullen did say you get those guys back on offense this week, Malik Davis and Richard Garage. Those guys will be back. He did not mention any new injuries there. So I know Kingsley went down against Vanderbilt. Mullen did not bring him up today in the press conference. Hopefully he's okay, ready to go. The big one, Elam back on defense. He's pretty good to go there. You can go back and listen to the Vanderbilt review for the prognosis there. But emergency use only versus Vanderbilt is what Dan Mullen said. He didn't feel comfortable, so he held him out one more time. Didn't mention and shed some light on Brenton Cox, Will. I don't know if you caught this in the press conference. Dan Mullen did say he was injured last week in practice. He played anyway, played the first half. Florida gets up, no use to play him in the second half. Save him. Don't need to play the second half. We're going to win this game anyway. So since Florida was up big versus Vanderbilt, decided to save him as well. So looks like, Will, as far as, you know, there's going to be the normal bumps and bruises. Richard Garage and those guys up front probably still nursing some injuries, but it looks like you may have your starting five offensive line back. Malik Davis will be back in the run game as well. And the big one, Kyrie Elam, back with the improved play of one Jason Marshall, probably on the opposite side of him now.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I actually thought the guys who played the best in the game against Vanderbilt were the safeties. I thought Trey Dean played well. I thought Rashad Torrance played really well as well. And you know, obviously the tackles were pretty significant there for Torrance. I think he had 15 tackles in the game. Yeah. But
I think he had 13 at halftime.
So. Yeah, well, and that's indicative of where I think they're kind of weak, which is the linebacker position. I thought that the linebackers they're not even trying to guard receivers and running backs out in the flat with their linebackers. They're just making that a responsibility to either the star or the safety. And so Torrance was having to go make those tackles. And oftentimes those tackles came, you know, 5, 6, 7 yards down the field. Now, to his credit, he made the tackles, right? And so that was one of the problems, I think, in the Alabama game, is that those guys, both Trevez Johnson and Torrance, were struggling to make those tackles, and some other guys as well were struggling to make those tackles. Dean was really good in coverage. He had two pass breakups. Mm-hmm. He had the interception.
I haven't seen a DB be that aggressive in forever in a game with multiple occasions in the same game.
Now, again, we're talking about Vanderbilt, and Ken Seals is pretty bad. At the same time, we haven't seen a Florida DB be that aggressive in like 2 years. Yeah. And so having those guys out there, and I think sort of finding the guy who's going to be your physical enforcer at safety and the guy who's going to be your pass defender at safety might be important for them as well, because you'll have the ability to do that. Like you mentioned, Jason Marshall's getting better. The pass interference penalties are starting to sort of wane a little bit. He's not grabbing as much. He's, I think, more confident in what he's doing. And with Kyrie Elam back, now you should have lockdown on the outside. And then you've got safeties that you can trust. And I do wonder, does that start to free up some things where Florida, I know you mentioned it at the end of the game, they had three linebackers in rather than, or even really four linebackers in when you count the buck. In a true 3-4, they haven't done that pretty much all year. It's almost always been exclusively some sort of dime or nickel because
and it was something I brought up last week and we actually got it. We had Jeremiah Moon, Mamu Diabate, and Tyron Hopper on the field at the same time.
Well, I tell you, Hopper's fast enough to go out and cover backs in the flat and do those sorts of things. Now, obviously, he has to know his assignment, but he is fast enough to get out there and do that. He's a guy who probably has the skills to be a true three-down linebacker, and Florida hasn't had one of those guys in a really long time there in the middle. I mean, Jeremiah Moon has done an admirable job against the run especially, and he's important to the way that defense functions, but at the end of the day, you're not going to mistake him for a guy who you want in pass coverage. What they're ending up doing is they're ending up dropping him almost like a defensive lineman in a zone blitz. And then they're asking the safeties to cover the flats and cover the outside, which you can do, but then limits what you can do overall. I think Diabate and Hopper out there. In fact, if you're going to go nickel or dime, I wonder whether Diabate and Hopper are going to start to be the two guys who see the max amount of time. And Moon's the guy that they run off the field in those situations where they think the opposition's going to throw. And again, with the fact that your safeties are playing better, you've now got Marshall playing better, you've got Elam coming back. Does the defense have an opportunity to improve? I looked today, I was really surprised. They're like 34th in the country now overall in yards per pass attempt. Right. They were down like 80th after the Alabama game, and they've sort of slowly made their way up. Now, granted, they've played Tennessee, who's been explosive since they played Florida, but wasn't great. Obviously missed a bunch of big plays there against the Gators. Then they played Kentucky, who is mistake for 2019 LSU.
And Will Levis did look better versus LSU this week, didn't he?
Yeah, but he also looked awful against Chattanooga. So, again, I don't think you're going to mistake him for Joe Burrow. And then obviously,
hey, Penn State might be undefeated if they had Will Levis as their backup quarterback this past week.
Maybe so, but again, you get my point, right? That they have feasted on the people that they should feast on.
Yep.
But they've feasted on the people that they should feast on. And last year, when we played teams that the defensive backs should have gotten healthy, should have played well against, the defensive backs did not play well and did not get healthy against those guys. They wound up giving up yards to just about everybody that they played. And so I do think there's some more trust developing in the backside of the defense. I think there's going to be more trust with Elam coming back. And I'm really interested to see what they do at the linebacker position, because with Cox in there, with Carter in there, they've got guys who have the ability to get pressure with the front four. And if they can do, I think the trust that they're starting to build at the safety position is going to sort of cascade its way down to where they don't feel like they have to blitz to get pressure on third downs, which is great, because every time they blitzed the other day against Vanderbilt just threw hot and was able to kill it. So you can't blitz when you're playing off the way they're playing off. And I think there are some schematic things that they're going to be able to change because of the safeties playing the way they're playing. So I was really impressed with the safety play.
Yeah, me too. Best we've seen in quite some time for the Gators there, no matter the opponent. All right, we'll go quickly. Elijah Blades dismissed from the team, Dan Mullen said. We got the news yesterday on Twitter. And, of course, Mullen confirmed it today. Mullen said he dismissed him from the team. They had a meeting on Sunday. Elijah Blades no longer part of the program. I know a lot of people wondered why he was taken to begin with. Of course, Florida was fighting with some depth issues up front or on the backside in the secondary, especially with Kimbrough transferred away. Jaden Hill gets hurt. The Blades thing had kind of already started, but still not necessarily till after the transfer had happened and a little bit before Jaden Hill. That's when the talk would happen. Of course, he was a late arrival to fall camp. Not really contributed so much. I mean, he was in key moments versus the Kentucky game last week, had the penalty as well. So he was in the game, in a key game, in key moment there, messing up things for Florida last week. I don't know if it's anything. I don't know any more than it's already out there. Of course, we know the history of Blades kind of bouncing around different programs, ends up at Florida. Of course, it'd be overblown if we could sit here and say it's a huge loss. To me, the only way it's a loss now is if some more injuries happen on the back end. If Kyrie Elam continues to miss some games, if Helm or Marshall end up getting injured, you probably would have thrown Blades out there to take over for one of those guys. So that's pretty much it. It pretty much puts out there that the secondary, especially at cornerback, has to stay a little healthy now. And Perkins was talking to the media this evening. He could probably play some corner now, Florida needing to, Travis Johnson as well. You can shift some pieces around, something not necessarily you don't want to have to do. So hopefully Elam, Marshall, Helm, those guys stay healthy, and you can keep them. You can keep other guys as backups there if needed, and also play them at the star position if need to as well. You don't want to have to be shuffling pieces this late into the season, I don't think, Will. So that's pretty much the only hit, I think, that back there in the secondary is if Florida does get hit with some more injuries.
Yeah, though you wonder whether some of the younger guys maybe pass Blades on the depth chart. Based on some of the, you know, you mentioned the penalty, and obviously he's been out there a little bit, but Florida's seen what he can do and, you know, brought him in late. And if he's not really building trust with his teammates, then that's something, you know, we just talked about safeties and having to trust those guys and how that cascades down. And that's a big part of it. And, you know, we wish him well, right? Go someplace and find yourself some playing time. And hopefully this is just a disagreement amongst management and the player. And, you know, the player decides to go someplace else as opposed to something that's more serious, that's causing a dismissal that we'll hear about that'll leak out over time. But yeah, you know, I wish him well, hope he does a great job. And, you know, in the meantime, I think, you know, yes, immediately this is not an enormous loss. It becomes an enormous loss as you start to get injuries and problems like that. But again, I think there are guys like, you know, Ethan Pouncey can probably come in and play if you need to, as opposed to Blades. I don't know that there's nothing that we saw from him while he was out there on the field that suggests that he's going to be a difference maker, that he was just always a depth piece. And so if you've got young guys who are coming along who you want to give time out there instead of the guy who just came into the program a few months ago, I think it makes sense that for both sides to probably move on.
All right. Well, one more thing, man, before we let you go, what will we learn versus LSU? You know, do style points matter? You got LSU dealing with some injuries. Look, of course, go win the game right now. You could say just go get the W, but do style points matter for a lot of the fan base out there after the Kentucky game a couple weeks ago? Vanderbilt didn't do much to excite anybody. And look at what LSU is dealing with right now. Cornerback Derek Stingley was announced last week that he's likely done for the season. Safety Major Burns missed last week. He's going to miss this week too versus Florida. And now wide receiver Keyshawn Boutte for LSU out. Their best pass catcher, their best defender, defensive end Ali Gay will miss the game versus the Gators this week too. Both of those guys suffered injuries versus Kentucky, Boutte and Gay did. So, Will, I mean, storyline, very similar to last year. LSU's missing some pieces. They're going to play Florida. And Max Johnson went into the swamp and beat the Gators. So here we go. One more time, a year later, LSU dealing with some guys not playing, questions about Edo, or even – more raised right now, of course, last year off the heels of a national championship, but now LSU continuing the trend of not playing well under Ed Orgeron. Dan Mullen, as I said, kind of going back to a previous point, there's a plan for the Cadets this week on the road, Mullen says. He's tons of options. He won't get into the specifics of it publicly, but there are some options and some changes. Quote, a lot of variations is what Dan Mullen said. So there we go. There's a storyline. But what can we learn versus LSU, and do style points matter?
I think to fans, style points probably matter. It gets the noise down. It gets people hopeful that they can pull off an upset when they face Georgia in a couple of weeks afterwards. But you're right. It's the same storyline as last year from an LSU perspective, except the game's in Baton Rouge and Florida isn't anywhere near as good as they were last year. I mean, last year, Florida went in with a legitimate chance to make the playoff if they just pulled that one out. Granted, you had to have, like, you know, what was it? Valentino today said it was like a scene from a Michael Jackson Thriller video out there during the Super Bowl last year, where you couldn't see anything from the press box, and you know, I'm sitting there struggling to see it on TV. So there was some special
one part where I'm really glad they have TVs in the press box, because that was about the only way I was seeing anything.
there were extenuating circumstances, but at the same time, the reason LSU was in that game last year is because Florida turned the ball over, and because Florida decided to blitz incoherently and leave guys wide open streaking down the field. I don't think they'll do the second part. I think they're better on the back end. I think they're more disciplined on the back end. I don't think anybody will throw a shoe this year. So I think we could probably think that that's not going to happen. Now, at the same time, I think LSU's wounded. I think those guys I think they believe in Orgeron, whether or not other people do or not. I think they're going to fight for their coach because they want him to stay. And then the other thing that I think you need to consider is just that Florida is such an imperfect team that, you know, look at it. They've turned the ball over extensively in every game they've had this year, at least one turnover, most of the time too. If you turn the ball over twice and LSU doesn't turn it over at all, I'm not sure Florida's good enough to overcome a 2-0 turnover deficit, assuming that LSU comes out and plays hard. So, you know, if LSU just sort of, you know, gets down, you have an opportunity. If you jump out 14-0, I think LSU will fold.
Yep.
Right. Yep. But if you let them sit there and linger and it's, you know, 10-7 LSU at halftime, I think they're going to get excited. I think their fans are going to get excited. And I think you're going to have a real dogfight on your hands. And this game is almost always within 3 points. So the fact that I think what Florida's favored by 10 or something like that, I think, you know, if I'm looking at it, I'm going, ooh, like, I don't know, a team that turns the ball over a ton with a lot of inconsistency at quarterback, injuries on the offensive line, going on the road, an 11 a.m. start there out in Baton Rouge, you know, Orgeron fighting for his job, like all those things. There's a scenario where Florida doesn't come out of this with a win. And I think it's a reasonable thing to say that Florida maybe doesn't come out of it with a win. But obviously, I think we expect Florida to win, and that should be the expectation. Florida is the better team, but I would have said that last year too. And so I think just getting out with a win is the important part. And that's really sort of the story for the rest of the year. Just get out with a win. There've been a lot of one score losses this year and last year for Florida, where clock management, timeout management, fourth down decisions, all that sort of stuff has been questionable when it comes to Dan Mullen. You know, make the right decisions, put your team in a place to be successful, go for fourth downs early, put your foot on the throat of LSU, and maybe you walk out of there with a 40-point win. But, you know, I think if you were to look at the history of this rivalry, if you were to look at sort of what happens when these two teams face each other, it's almost always coming down to the wire. I think that should probably be the expectation. And then if Florida happens to win by 2 or 3 touchdowns, then we're just pleasantly surprised.
All right. Good stuff, Will. And that will do it for this episode. What you got, if you haven't done so yet, I know Will mentioned it just a little bit. What do you wrote and read and reaction, of course, the Emory Jones, Kyle Trask, early start comparison for both those quarterbacks. What you got coming up this week, Will?
So we'll obviously have an LSU preview. I'm actually writing something. I saw something at ESPN today where they had a couple of writers still listing Bryce Young as a favorite for the Heisman Trophy. So I have to write something to refute that, because it's ridiculous that you would have him as the leader for the Heisman Trophy after that loss against Texas A&M. And then I didn't get a chance to push it last week, but you can see it on the video. I have a book out on Amazon.
Oh, yes.
It's called 1980 Reasons to Root for the Georgia Bulldogs. And every page inside is blank. So it's a great gag gift for any of your friends who are from Georgia, who go to Georgia. If you're going to the cocktail party, go pick it up. You can get it on Amazon. Just search 1980 Reasons under the book section of Amazon. You'll find it right away. I'm the author on that one. And, you know, it's, if you want to pick fun at your Georgia friends, you might not have too much longer to do it. So make sure you do it now while you still can. And then, you know, you can send them another copy if Georgia happens to trip up along the way this year.
Yeah, we don't get into much NFL news here, Will, but if you're watching live on YouTube and missing it, John Gruden is out in Oakland or Las Vegas. So, I mean, even more stuff is coming out about that situation there. So, you know, everybody go read that. Don't want to really want to I haven't got a chance to read it. I just know more came out. So that and an AP source has cited he is out. So
the lesson, as always, is don't text and don't email. Call someone. If you want to say something that's really, really bad, make sure you call them, because it will.
Will, don't share the DM between me and you. Do not share that DM.
Hey, you know, I got some leverage over you there, buddy.
Oh, man. Some fun head there. All right. That is Will Miles. You can find him at readandreaction.com, on YouTube at Read and Reaction, and his Twitter handle at Will Miles SEC. I'm the host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.